Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio. Every third Saturday, we get to chat with artist Victoria Chick. She is a contemporary figurative artist and early 19th and 20th century print collector who is based in Silver City, New Mexico, and that's in the southwest corner, a beautiful region, well known for art. And in fact, it's an artist community. There's studio tours, lots of art galleries, and entertainment, and a lot of nature out in this region. We've got the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument, the Gila Wilderness, the Gila National Forest, all kinds of amazing places. So it's no wonder that Victoria kind of spearheaded this project. Not kind of, she did. She spearheaded this. And now she's got all these people working with her to create the Southwest Regional Museum of Art and Art Center. So she comes on our show every third Saturday. We talk about different artists and art. And we always like to catch up on this amazing project of really putting in a fine art gallery, museum, and education center in Silver City, New Mexico. And I encourage you to go to that website and see what is going on there. We're going to be covering this next month in depth, but you can go to swrm-art.org and also keep up with Victoria at victoriachick.com. So welcome back, Victoria. How are you?
Oh, thank you, Lisa. It's been a great day so far, and I'm glad to be here. And we're going to get, I guess we're going to talk about photography today.
Yeah, I love this. We're going to talk about William Henry Jackson. And but he was more than a photographer. I think he was quite industrious, wouldn't you say?
Well, I would say that. And, you know, he really, as a young man, he was an artist. He specialized in drawing. And he got into photography in kind of a backdoor way, because photography was going on, but he got a job retouching photographs. You know, they always used to do that to add color, because they didn't have color film. Mm-hmm. They would add color with oil paint onto photographs. And so he did some of that when he was a young man.
You know, one of the things, let's just say he's from way back when, he's famous for being part of Hayden's expedition for Yellowstone and being part of the movement to help Yellowstone become our very first national park. But we're going back into, he was born in 1843, right? Yeah, 18.
Right.
Yeah, he's, when I'm looking at, one thing that, you know how I know we've talked about him before. Yeah, he was born April 4th, 1843 in New York.
Yes.
And died in 1942. So that, wow, he was almost 100 years old.
He was. His 99 years, he packed a lot into those 99 years.
Wow. Imagine living that long.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this topic. And about cameras, about photography in general, and we have all this digital stuff now, where we don't have film. He lived through the film era. He lived through the film era, but before that, he was using metal or glass plates and traveling around. You mentioned the expedition. That was what they were using back then. Were plates and. He had to be so well equipped when he was on that expedition, where we get kind of spoiled. We just point and shoot now and want to, you know, put it on our computer and, you know, fuss with it some. And all of the photographs come out looking pretty good when we're done. He dealt with a lot more.
Yeah, because even travel, it's not like you have roads that are easy to travel.
Oh, right.
And you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, get it into my smooth car with shock absorbers, you know, you know, they didn't have that. But what
I don't think his horse-drawn wagon or photography studio had shock absorbers.
No. So, I mean, being able to take this glass and be able to produce it, it kind of reminds me of what we were talking about with the Civil War artists and photographers, what they were going through to capture the battle scenes and the soldiers. And I just wanted to touch on this because I've been actually using a piece of his art for many years. Nancy and I, as part of our Love Your Parks tour, as you know, traveling the country full time, documenting parks and public lands, one of our projects, like what we talked about in regards to public art with you, and we're going to be doing some more of that with you. I'm excited about it. One of the pieces is it's a map. And I love old maps. Nancy and I both have just a crazy thing about maps, but we've documented the Pony Express. So whenever we're on like that kind of route, we're trying to do the whole Pony Express because, you know, why not? And so in all the articles that we have of the Pony Express, this is the map. I mean, the association, the Pony Express Association uses it, the National Park Service, it is a public domain map to use. It's actually it's in the Library of Congress. And it's the Pony Express route in 1860. And what's so cool is he has the map of it. So he did cartography. The information about the route, very short, about the Pony Express themselves. But then he's got the paintings of scenes of where these riders went through. Yes. I think that's pretty incredible.
That piece of work. And that is kind of coincidence, because on my wall, about 10 feet away from where we're sitting right now, is a map, a Pony Express map. And and it starts out in St. Joseph, Missouri. Is that
right? Oh, yeah.
Yours is anyway. There was a hotel there that put that map. They had it painted on their wall, and I don't know who did the painting on the wall, but Eleanor Roosevelt dedicated it, but way back when. And it's a really neat thing to look at. You know, it's got associations for me being from Missouri, and another association is that I just think that the whole westward expansion was a really interesting time in history.
It really was. And the map I'm talking about with his does the entire route. And we were actually just outside St. Joseph, Missouri. And the weather, when Nancy and I were driving from Wisconsin to Lubbock, Texas, we did part of the Jefferson Highway. You know, we've talked about that on a show with you before. That then the highway, everyone, we do a podcast on this every fourth Thursday. And this is a highway from 1915. That was created by the editor of the Better Homes and Garden magazine, because he understood the vitality of these small town America, needing these travelers to come through and for travelers to understand the history and, you know, all of that good stuff. It's like it is known as America's first vacation route, that goes from Winnipeg, Canada, down to New Orleans, Louisiana. And when you go through these towns, I mean, these are like teeny, teeny towns. In fact, I was just posting on Facebook the other day, we went through a town called Stanberry, not Strawberry, but Stanberry in Missouri. And by the way, Missouri, that state knows public art really, really well. I'm just going to say, like, they do. But here's this tiny town, like, of 1,200. They have this giant city park, like, for the size of the town. The town goes around it, 1,200 people, okay? Yeah. They have this beautiful mural showing the legacy. I know we're going to do this on another show, but it all ties together about what we're talking about. This, you know, this little town has been there since the 1800s and got mapped because of the railroad. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been put on a map at that time. And so they have a beautiful mural of the train coming through, and then they have a caboose in their park next to the swings and the old gazebo. So I thought that was cool. But I'm just like, and then you go down this road a little bit and there are giant gas pumps from way back when. So anyway, that's a whole other show, but we did go right by St. Joseph, but the weather turned on us. So there was no point of doing photography, and it was darn cold because we just dodged a snowstorm too. But I think these artists, I mean, I'm going, oh, we dodged a snowstorm, wah, wah, wah for us. But when you think about him, like William Henry Jackson and these artists, these pioneers going out, they're like, and look what he had to have done part of the Pony Express route to do it, just, you know what I mean? Like, you've got to think, it's like our U.S. Postal Service, through sleet and slow or snow or rain and snow, we're going to still deliver your mail. These artists are like that, right? That kind of tenacity.
I think they were are a special breed. You know, the people that were the photographers during the Civil War, certainly William Henry Jackson, had the courage and exploratory mind, I think, to throw caution to the wind, more or less, and set out. And yes, sometimes he was with an expedition, but there were a lot of times when he was just out wandering around photographing scenes that he thought were worth photographing.
Mm.
And one of those, he did this, there's a place called Mountain of the Cross that was rumored, because it wasn't on anybody's direct trail route. But he found it, and he was the first person to take a photograph of it. So he was able to prove that it actually existed. I thought that was kind of neat. And we have cliff dwellings here, but the largest cliff dwellings I know about are in Mesa Verde. And he was the first person to photograph those.
Wow.
And yeah, so he made a reputation for himself as the greatest landscape photographer in America. And that was, that was even before the turn of the century. So he was way ahead of anybody else that was a photographer at that time.
I'm looking at some of his work, and everyone, Victoria's article on this topic and William Henry Jackson with images is up on blendradioandtv.com, but we link it in the show notes. So no matter where you're listening to this from, just go look in the podcast notes and there'll be a link to Victoria's article and also her website. But this one of the Lone Star Geyser in Yellowstone, I mean, here these guys get up there and I'm just going, here, you know, it blows my mind, because he did Yosemite and the El Capitan one. It was an 1899 photograph he took.
Yes.
And I'm looking at that. So that's when he started doing the colorization on top of it, right? Or because it looks like a painting to me.
He was noted for color. The dyes and things for photography were iffy early on. So he did a lot of experimenting with color, and he found a way to be entrepreneurial and with the color, because he started making color postcards, which were like a real new thing in the late 19th century. So he went to, you guys saw, we've talked about the Chicago Exposition or the Columbian Exhibition before. That was in the 1890s, and he went to that and had his photographs. They were really well received, because it was like miraculous for people to see colored things in photography at the time. But one of the things that he did was meet this guy who had actually been one of the organizers of that exhibition in Chicago. And the guy offered to pay all his expenses to travel around the world. And he gave him 5 years to do this and take pictures. And so he did, he accepted that offer, but he did it in much less time than 5 years. I think he was home early. And when he got back, he had all these negatives, and he was, I believe he was still using plates. I don't think he was using roll film yet, but he took his negatives to this publishing company, and they liked them so much that they kind of made some arrangement that he would be part of the company. And so, so financially he really made out like a bandit from that connection.
Yeah, because
he had his postcard. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because he was involved with a lot of different publications, the Detroit Publishing Company.
Yes.
And also he was in like Harper's Weekly magazine. I'm looking at all these things he did.
Yeah.
But it's like
he sold his pictures to all kinds of publications. And as color processing improved from other people's work, his type of color processing became less cutting edge, let's just say. So after about 30 years, he went out of business. He went out of that business. But by that time, I think this is so cool about him. He was over 70 when he went out of business. And this is a time when, I mean, people retire, you know?
Right, right.
He didn't retire. He said he reinvented all of his himself, really, and he became a commercial artist. He went around the country lecturing. He wrote about photography. And I mean, I think that's probably what kept him going till he died at 99, you know?
And he painted too. He did paintings.
He was interested in everything and he did everything. Yeah, he started painting, I know. It was just, he was an amazing guy. I'm sorry I never knew him.
I know, me too, because I think we should be hearing, I mean, I know art people know him, but
yeah,
you know what I mean? I think it just should, there should be more, but you know, I'm looking at a painting he did of the muddy pond in Vermont. And this painting, I mean, he knows lighting, which I know you know from photography. And I think when you're doing, sure. I think what's kind of, and I want to know this from your side as an artist, when you're doing black and white, there's a whole other, you know, your exposure becomes a really big deal. Like, are you whiting everything out or are you making it all too dark? Your balance of that, right? And understanding lighting is key. But then when he's taking these black and whites and then adding color, he's kind of working both ends, like forward and reverse. Does that, you know what I mean? And so I think when he gets to the painting side, he was able to use both those. I don't know if I'm making sense about this, but when you're
you are.
Yeah, he's reversing stuff.
He had an artist eye. He understood how to compose a picture, and he had with his early work, he had time to decide exactly the angle that the camera should be pointed. You know, he framed his pictures really well, and so it's no wonder to me that he became a really good fine artist using paint at a later date.
And the lighting in there. That's
the lighting. Yes,
the lighting gets me. And looking at his global pictures, I mean, he went Mexico City. He went to China, India. Again, not easy to photograph all of that and travel with all this gear. You know, man.
Imagine packing that stuff around was a chore.
Yeah, I mean, I know how musicians feel and I know how we are because we travel full time. It's like the less you take, the better. And it doesn't really always work that way. But I wondered if he ever married. It doesn't, there's nothing.
He did marry. He, you know, his wife, I think, must have been, I don't know, long suffering. But yeah. She's definitely understanding woman. He got married. I think he must have been, in his 30s when he got married, and he and his wife started a photographic studio, and she was, I think possibly he taught her what to do. And but she was evidently a fast learner, because after a short period of time, that was when he went on that expedition. So he left her to run the studio, and she was successful at it. So So I think, you know, she really knew from him what she was doing, and she did it well. And she was probably a personality that made people want to have their picture taken in their studio. They made another studio later on. I think it was after. It was after the Civil War, and they opened another studio in Omaha, Nebraska, which you don't always think of Omaha as being the bullseye of photography, but it was a large town. It was a prosperous town. It still is. And the trains went through, and it was convenient for him because he could go from the west to the west, all over the west, while she operated their studio there. And so he didn't have to be there in the studio all the time.
And they could just keep creating. creating and developing. I mean, that's like a cottage industry. You know, and
right.
Like I look at, there's certain musicians who started doing that. It's like their family went in and said, okay, we can do this, we can do that, and you do that. You know, and it divides up like that. It's kind right. of, yeah. I mean, it's a family business when you look at it that way, you know, as husband and wife. But I know that Scotts Bluff National Monument, you put that in the article about.
Yes.
Part of that monument, one of the wings in you know, I think it's in the visitor areas, dedicated to him. And so he has the park has 60 of his paintings or something.
Yes.
And that's something we talk about on our shows with the National Parks Arts Foundation, who have the artists in residence. And he would have loved that program. But a lot of times their art will be accepted into a collection through the National Park Service. And we always try to explain, like, that is such, that's valuable for you as an artist to have that,
yes.
right? Is that's a career highlight, I would say.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. I visited Scotts Bluff National Monument before it was, before there was a lot there, okay? I went to that part of Nebraska with my folks, and we drove up to the top of Scotts Bluff. And it's quite interesting, because at that portion of Nebraska is not particularly hilly, but there's this, you know, this giant bluff, and which seems not only a monument, but monumental mm-hmm. After you cross Nebraska. But I'm sorry, they didn't have any of his paintings there when I visited, because that was a long time ago. It was like 1962 that I was there then. But I think it's, you know, the fact that the Park Service is promoting the art is really valuable to visitors, because you get a much better understanding of what happened there and what it looked like back when, as opposed to what it looked like now.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really a good thing.
That's a good point. And I wonder about what you're doing with the work at the museum. Let me get everybody know the name, the full name here, the Southwest Regional Museum of Art and Art Center in Silver City, what you're doing there. I think we need these real, like, foundational rocks for art, because it preserving history in that way. Like, I think it's just these pillars of integrity, and for artists to have a place. I mean, artists pass away and then what happens, you know? And yes, we have Google and everything, but there's something magical to be able to actually go see those paintings.
Yes.
You know, I know what's happened to us doing shows with artists, and like going to the places, like we've interviewed artists who did a residency in Chaco Canyon up in Northwest New Mexico. And then we go to the park, and it's kind of now you have multiple perspectives of the park.
Yes.
So now you're not looking just through your own lens, which could be limiting, right? Because it's
absolutely,
just,
yeah.
But now you're going, now that I've seen all these artists and what they've created with Chaco, you know, there was a side of me that really wanted to take a whole bunch of different photos. I didn't have time. And then there's a side of me going, man, like, they were super creative of what they were doing. and so, like, you know, I don't know, it was just such a different experience, because it was so fresh in you know, what we'd experience on shows and, you know, producing the magazine work with their art, that once you're there, I don't know, it's just all these different other layers. And I think that it's something when people capture these scenes of places and scenes of people, an art, whether it's photography,
it
kind of makes you realize that somebody else is looking, and what was the artist feeling when they captured that, you know, and then the process.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to know. Sometimes, you know, they're looking for facts. Sometimes they might be trying to interpret what they see. Maybe something strikes them more strongly than another aspect of what they see. So every photographer, you know, they can take the same picture, the same location, and the effect is not not going to be the same in each picture, sure, because the photographers, you know, have their own artistic vision when they take the picture. And of course, the light changes, and you know, there's so many variables. But like you were saying, when you visit something after having seen pictures and having read something about the area, that gives you as a viewer or a participant in the scene, it gives you a whole different perspective. And you know, no matter how good a picture is, it's a picture. And there's a lot that you don't pick up. Like if you're standing there, you can feel the breeze. If you look at a picture of that, you don't have that sensation. If you are looking at a picture, you may not see all the texture, although some photography is really, really good. But until you have experienced something like it, it doesn't have a great meaning for you. So when you put it all together, you get a package that's hard to beat.
You know, and it's hard too. I mean, we know just from magazine work, right?
Yes.
From being in print and now digital, that like everyone's computer monitors are calibrated differently. So no matter what you do, mm-hmm. once you hand something over or publish it on a website or print it in a document,
yep,
it's not the same. It's a very weird thing to say. And for photography, that's a whole other deal. And, yeah. you know, and now we can digitally fix, you know, if you were somewhere at high noon and the sun was, you know, hello, take yeah. you're in the middle of Texas and you're photographing at high noon. Well, you're good luck with that. But as I know, most photographers are like, take the damn photo, because what happens if you can never go back there? Now we can digitally fix these things.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting what AI is doing with it. That's a whole other show. But,
you know, it's interesting. What you say is absolutely true. When I first got a computer and was able to look at images and stuff, and they were really good. And then I had to take images of my own painting. Well, then I would look at them on the screen, and the color was not what the painting was. You know, my screen didn't have a capability, it seemed like, even though how many, I would make adjustments digitally, it was really difficult to nail the color down exactly. And I would look at it, I would be disappointed to send it to somebody, and they would say, oh, this color is just fabulous. And I thought, how can it be fabulous?
But their screen is different than
their computer is different. So their screen is different. So
wow,
you can't. I mean, whatever you do to send what you think you're sending, and or what you want to send, you're not really sure if the person receiving it is going to see it in the same way that you have sent it.
It's just one of those. I know that there's things you can do. That's why they get like the HC number. I'm not going to get it right. There's like codes for the colors and all of that. Yeah. But Pantone does all that as well. But it's still not the same, because people yeah. lighten. Everybody does something different with their computer. But even printing something changes everything. It's the same thing as you record something musically. And if it's going to be digital versus vinyl, or they record in different processes. And so somebody could have a pristine recording and you put it in your car, like let's say go back to the tape recorder and you have really bad speakers, well then it's going to suck. You know what I mean? So it's kind of this whole, it's a very, you know, art is fluid. That's basically it. It's always going to be different than what it is. But I wanted to ask you about this because we talked, you know, we do so many artists and musician interviews and writers, and a lot of the art, when I say artists, I mean in all genres, right?
Yeah.
The process is the powerful thing for them. So going back to someone like William Henry Jackson, here he is lugging this huge gear across whatever, on trains, planes, water, all of it, right? I don't know if did he have, I don't know about planes, but yeah, you know, but he does this whole thing. You climb up that mountain, take a photo of the geyser.
Yeah.
And now let's see, now maybe he's going to have to camp to get the light right, because he doesn't have all the digital stuff we have, but he has this other technology coming later. So his process, I always feel like he had a never ending process with what he did. You know what I mean? Because he's taking the photo. So you get joy, you're tired after, because now this is a big deal. Then, okay, we got to process this, and then we're going to mess with it with color. I mean, mess with it in a good way. And so that's a whole other art form. But as a lot of people I know is like, once they've done the creative process, they're done with it. Like authors, a lot of times they've written the book, then they have to go on the big media tour. And by the time they're doing the media tour, they're already knee deep in some project that they really don't care. I mean, I know they care obviously about their work and everything, but they just want to go back to what they're writing right now, because that other book has passed. Yeah. And sometimes like people are like, I don't know if I painted that one then, or did I write this? And for musicians, a little different, because now you live with the song if you're touring and performing. And sometimes you go, why did I have to write that? Everybody always wants that same song. So the process and the enjoyment and the process to me is very fascinating.
Well, yeah, I understand that. What you're talking about. I know when I'm painting, I'm into solving problems. I think I know what I want. There are steps I go through, but what makes it interesting for me is to solve little problems that happen in a painting. What color, you know, some of it is color related, some of it is compositional related, some things have to be redrawn sometimes, and you don't plan on a lot of these things. They happen. And you solve them as you're going. And sometimes it's like driving on a cross-country trip without a map in some ways. You know, this road looks interesting. Yeah, I think I'll try that. So their process is very important. And when the painting is done or the artwork is done, you know when you haven't known how much time it's going to take, or you haven't thought about, you know, putting the end at the end, but you know when you don't want to work on it anymore, that you just better stop. Because if you keep going, you're really going to be sorry.
And, you don't nitpick it. Yeah,
right. So I understand. I could really relate to that, to your comment about the process.
Yeah, I think I think for musicians, they get to relive it. But that's what I was thinking about him. Like, he had multiple processes.
Yes.
It's like one picture had many journeys.
Yes. Yes.
With what he was doing, you know, because even just the travel and, I mean, how much research could you even do when you're at the beginning?
Yeah.
You know?
Right. And you know what, when you if you're lucky enough as an artist or as a photographer or as a musician, as a musician, you might listen to a recording of something you did 10 years ago. If you're an artist, you might have a retrospective and you see a bunch of your work over a period of time displayed in one spot. Mm. Or if you're a photographer, it's kind of the same thing. A bunch of your work is up on a wall from many places that you've been, and you kind of relive what you went through to reach point, you know, to see everything. And it's a lot of times it looks different to you than it did when you finished it, because now you're looking at it under controlled lighting. It's different than it was in your studio, or you're seeing things juxtaposed next to each other that you hadn't thought of before.
Yeah, and it's different growth stages. Different growth stages in your craft.
So it's
and interests too, because maybe you did like maybe someone was all into this kind of botanical painting of plants and stuff. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh no, now I'm into worms and caterpillars or something. You know what I mean? So now I'm going to jump over here. And so you see like themes and musicians do this where they get into the concept album mode. Now you're very much like that too with your series. You do like the New Mexico labels with your paintings, these series. And then all of a sudden it's like, I'm done with that. Nope. I'm, you know, well, look at us with our magazines. It's like, we're not done. Like we can't, it's like, there's no ending of new interests to experience. And so you don't want to pigeonhole yourself in the arts.
It's so nice. That is such a nice thing about creativity, is that if you ring something out, you know, is W-R-I-N-G, ring it out. You move on to something else. And when you do, a lot of times the people who liked what you have done in the past are now disappointed in you because you're letting them down, because you're not doing that theme anymore. You moved on. And so artists sometimes get the opposite of fan mail when that happens.
But restaurants go through that. You know, and you got to think the culinary arts are an art form, right? And it's like, no, I'm tired of serving this. We're doing this. And it's like, no, I want my own favorite. Yeah. I want my, you know, pie a la mode.
Why aren't you serving spaghetti carbonara anymore?
Because I'm tired of cooking it. It's done. But I think the creative arts, and that's an important thing that artists do. And that's why I'm so fascinated about William Henry Jackson, is that I would love to see a retrospective of his work, like go in and see that.
I guess you have to go back to Scott's Bluff.
Okay. We'll do that. Well, you know what? I'll link it from your article. Travel writer Debbie Stone went to Scott's Bluff and has a whole article on it.
Oh, good.
So I'll make sure to hyperlink that so people can go see more about that. But that's this whole thing about the parks and how they merge history and culture and nature together, because the cultures live off of the nature, right? So it's all that same, you know, connectivity. And so what he did is cool, but I think he just kept transforming himself each time, like, oh, we can do this now. Oh, we can do this now, you know, and that is a secret to it. And by doing that and not sticking in, this is the pigeonhole, like most musicians hate, don't call me just this, you know, he kept moving forward, which for the viewer and the audience of the art, whatever form it is, it makes us grow. I think that's a huge part of the importance of the arts, is to get people to grow out of their comfort zone, whether you like it or not, which I know we've talked about on shows, but I just want to, you know, that's the truth. So when you're developing this museum in Silver City, you're talking fine art, I know contemporary, all kinds of things, right? In education, does the museum look at, I know we're going to talk about this next show, but I just want to like stick my toe in the water here.
Sure.
Do you see the retrospectives, you know, because we've never actually talked about that, being part of exhibits and things like that, if it comes to
being. Yes. You know, a lot of this is not, it will be up to what the curators feel will be great shows. So I'm saying one thing that could be done is you have an artist who's been working over quite a period of time, and you know their quality is really good, and you invite them to have a retrospective where you can see how they've changed, if they've changed, they probably have, and how they've grown. And it's not, you're not just looking at the work, that's key to it, but there's also a written dialogue that helps you, that moves you along through their show, so that you learn verbally and you learn visually what their life has been like as an artist and what's been important to them over the years.
Well, good museums are, you know, that's the thing about going to museums. Like, I think it was Georgia O'Keeffe's museum in Santa Fe, gallery yeah. museum. And they did that with her art. Like, yeah. you could see, like, she did all these New York skyscraper paintings that I had no idea she did. I didn't, you know, that I was just like, oh, she's the flower lady.
Yes.
And then I found out she was like all into bones and all, you know. And so you could see these, how she grew as an artist and how things changed.
Right.
And sometimes, like in music, sometimes I have to say, you lose the raw spirit as you progress in your career, depending on if you go back to that word integrity that I know you love. Mm-hmm. An artist can be swayed by all the new stuff and start to lose that raw purity. You know what yeah. I mean? I think that's interesting too.
All of us lose our way from time to time.
Oh, I know. We all have. God, look at right now in the world with AI and all of that. Yeah.
But when something's important in your life, in your whole life, it has to come out, and art, whatever form it takes, will crop out, even if somebody's laid off for a while or done work they're really not convinced of, because they know what's important to them. They know what, when you said integrity, they know they have their integrity, and they're not going to accept something that they might try for a while. They're not going to accept that continuing on. They will look for some way out of it that has more meaning to them.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's a process. Yeah,
yeah.
Because
yes.
it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to try this. This sounds like a really cool recipe. And then,
yeah,
oopsie, that yeah. didn't quite work. Oh. But that's the process. I think that's the thing too, is artists always wear their heart on the sleeve, yeah. you know, with yeah. the process. It's like, this is it, you know. But I'm so glad we talked about him. I'm going to geek out on him, because it's like, I think it means a lot more to me than when I know we talked about him years and years ago, and he's been through some of the other conversations and other things we've done, like the Pony Express. But I don't know, with us traveling the country, this means so much more to me now, having yes. been to some of these places. And
you know, that's true. Your experiences now are so different than you were when we first started all these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, I mean, that's life. And as we mature, I won't say getting older, but as we mature and have more experiences of various kinds, art means more things to us in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we change just as the artist does over
that's
time.
Cool. Art rocks, man. That's it, period.
It does.
So everyone, again, Victoria's article is up on I said blendradioandtv.com earlier. I apologize. It is nationalparktraveling.com that the article is on again, but the link is in the show notes. But yeah, it ties to all the parks, and I'll make sure the Scott's Bluff is all hyper connected, hyperlinked, okay. and all of that good stuff there. But you can keep up with Victoria again, victoriachick.com. She's here every third Saturday. Keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. And Victoria will be back on next month in June talking about Southwest. Oh my gosh, I'm excited. We're going to talk about helping to fund the Southwest Regional Museum of Art and Art Center and just all kinds of the programs that they're doing and all the amazing work they're doing in Silver City, New Mexico, the next New Mexico major art destination when this all comes together and things are already happening. So that's exciting. Very cool. Very cool. Thank you so much, Victoria.
I had fun. Thank you. And I'll talk to you next month.
Yeah.